Yeah, you have no idea how many times we've been laughed at about those towels. Especially when we went to all these like entrepreneurial meetings and startup meetings, and they're like, everybody asks, like, what are you doing? I'm doing an app, and what are you doing? I'm doing software, tech. And then we're like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, do the towel. People were like, who is this guy?
Welcome to We Grow Show. What keeps us driving is what drives you further. This is your hosts, Sebastian Kunz
and Sarah Kaya.
We are here today with Leonard Reaper. Leonard is founder or co-founder of Drive and Things, both pretty interesting companies. One is an agency, the other one is product and e-commerce company. And we are pretty eager to hear more about Leonard and his companies. Actually, pretty funny though. 2 weeks ago, Leonard and I, we were at the barbecue of a friend, and by coincidence, we already met. So it's nice to meet you again, Leonard.
Thanks for having me.
So just to start and kick it into our, well, growth show. If you connect the dots, growth and yourself, how would you describe it?
I think it grows simultaneously. So I think our companies, when they grow, I grow. The other way around, when I grow as a managing director or as a founder, our companies grow. So of course, whenever we have a challenge within the company, with solving that challenge, I personally grow. The other way around, when I read a book and I grow personally, I'll take this personal growth into the companies, and then the companies grow. So
that's pretty cool. Looking at what you've done and achieved in the last 6 years, you have not only co-founded but also managed several companies. Can you tell us a bit about the last 5 years, how this all started, when your journey began in 2013? And
so it all actually started back in college. I think I stopped looking at my grades in the second semester, so I never really cared about grades. I always told myself I'm doing this for myself. I want to just be the best I can be. And I never even picked up my diplomas. Like, I still don't know what I got, you know, what I graduated with. I have no idea, because I never actually wanted to work for somebody else. Mm-hmm. I did work for a few design agencies around the world. I worked in Germany for a couple. I worked in Chicago for one for a little bit while I was studying at the same time. But right after college, I think I took like 3 weeks off. Mm-hmm. Then me and my co-founder, Florian Gogh, we founded a design agency where we do we specialize in product design and branding. Mm-hmm. And I think about 3 to 4 months later, we did our own product, because we, of course, I've studied product design myself. Mm-hmm. And it was like a summer break and all the clients were on vacation. So we wanted to do like a small project. So we did a sports towel. We wanted to do something in a market where there hasn't been a lot of innovation, something quick, something mm-hmm. where we said, hey, it only takes us like 4, 5, 6 weeks to do this product. And so we decided on a sports towel out of, I think it was like 100 options we had, mm-hmm. like 100 different ideas, but it was the sports towel, which we thought was going to be really quick. So we designed it, and we didn't even think about making it really big. We just wanted to do one for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And from this sports towel, a whole sports brand has arisen. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been doing for the past 4 years. We have a design agency here in Hamburg, mm-hmm. with six and a half employees, and we have 5 employees in our sports brand, so running both at the same time. We're also in the same office.
So with sports towel, we are talking of is Towel Plus, right?
Yeah, it's called Towel Plus.
So what makes Towels Plus actually so special? Where could our audience get actually one if they hear us right now and think like, wow, that sounds awesome?
So you sports towel plus is available, I think, in a couple thousand stores actually at the moment, which is pretty cool. What makes it special, it has a couple of features which other sports towels don't have. So when we design whatever, if we design for a client or if we design for ourselves or our own sports brand, we always try to make a world champion product. Mm-hmm. So what that means is we scan the market for weeks or for months. We try to scan every product there is, mm-hmm. and in its price category, whatever, if it's a client's product or if it's our own product, in its price category, we call it a world champion product. We wanted to make the best of the best. So our sports towel, for example, it has a magnetic clip built in, like a magnet, so you can hang it up on the machines. It has a sleeve, like more of a hoodie, which prevents the towel from sliding down the workout bench. It has a pocket. It has different colored sides, so you never mix up your skin side, where your personal space is, and the side for the machines. So it has a couple of features which other sports towels don't have, and we noticed that people were really annoyed by those missing features. They were really annoyed to place the towels on the floor. They were annoyed by a towel sliding off the bench. Mm-hmm. They were annoyed by having all that stuff like phone, like headphones, whatever, in your pockets. So mm-hmm. we wanted to have, you know, a pocket in the towel. Yeah, we just opened our own warehouse in China mm-hmm. last month, and we're opening our first warehouse in the US this month. So, which we're like super, super happy about that. We have one in Hamburg, one in China, one in US now, because we just had too many international shipments going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the towel is available in, I think, about 24 countries, and Germany being the by far biggest country where we are selling those.
So if I'm in the US, what would be the easiest address to find your products and to buy it directly?
The US is probably still Amazon, because they deliver with Prime 24 hours. We're talking to Bed Bath & Beyond right now, and we're really far ahead. GNC, Groupon, mm-hmm. CVS, which is, we are very far ahead with CVS.
So. Very nice. Cool.
How about if we offer our audience a discount code? Would you like to do that?
Absolutely. Go to our website. It's at www.strive.de or strive.shop. Strive is spelled STRYVE, so Strive with a Y. And type in Growth Show 20. So one word, Growth Show 20. And we're happy to ship you a product. We ship worldwide.
I think now I will definitely order a product.
You just got yourself a discount code, yeah. Sarah. Very smart move.
Exactly.
Elena, you just talked about 100 products, or more or less 100 products that you were thinking about developing yourself.
Yeah.
Why the towel? Because when we look at this, I mean, it's a great product. I've seen the pitch, I've seen the video and everything. But a towel is not typically the sexiest product that a German digital company develops.
Yeah, you have no idea how many times we've been laughed at about those towels. Especially when we went to all these entrepreneurial meetings and startup meetings. And they're like, everybody asks, like, what are you doing? I'm doing an app. And what are you doing? I'm doing software, tech. And then we're like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, do the towel. People were like, who is this guy? And so it was very obvious after looking at that long list of product ideas that we had gathered for years, because it was just as it was supposed to be, like a 3-month project. It was fast.
Yep.
You know, it was a textile, like we knew we didn't have to do any mechanics, even though we can do electronic products as well, it's no problem. But we were missing the budget for our own production, of course, like we couldn't do any certifications for electronics. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to do them because mm-hmm. they take time. So we said, hey, 3 months, so towel out of textile, very easy to do, low minimum order quantities. When you ship them, they don't get kaput, you know, like they don't break. Because they are, of course, out of textile, like all this kind of stuff. Kind of also, we scanned the market, and that was a big thing. And I think maybe people are familiar with the blue ocean and red ocean strategy. So, mm-hmm. blue ocean is when there is nobody in that niche, red ocean is when everybody's in that niche. And it was so easy because all the towels back then, it was like 3 to 4 years ago, there was worldwide, you can see like 3 to 4. I would rather say people, not even companies, more people that did or that wanted to do a multifunctional sports towel.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really did it. And so it was a very easy decision when we saw that nobody had anything on the market that's similar to what we were going to do.
Yeah, it makes total sense, especially because, as you mentioned, the breaking part is just so easy, it's just so convenient, and there's not much that can go wrong. You said it only took a couple of weeks / month to develop this product. Can you tell us about what was done in the first couple of weeks? How did you find the right people to produce your product, as well as the right manufacturers and textiles and different, there's thousands of different textiles in the world. So how did this go for you in the first couple of days?
Choosing the right textile actually was lots of stuff went wrong. So we had lots of problems at the very beginning. I mean, what we did, first of all, we started sketching. We started finding out what the real problems are in the gym, like what would other people also like to be solved, like what problems, because we're always trying to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And we're always trying to solve relevant problems, like a big mass of people having the same problem. If you solve it clever in a smart way with a good price tag on it, then you sure have buyers. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to convince people to buy something that they don't even need. If you solve a problem, you show them the solution to something that they already think of being a problem in their lives. So that's what we did. We did some research. I think it was like a week of drawing, a week of, like we did 1 week, 1 week, 1 week. I think after 4 weeks, we had our own prototype. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I mean, we bought towels, I went to my grandma's house, she sewed them, we put like a pocket in, we stapled, everything was like really lean product development. But that's what we do, even with clients, when we do prototypes for them, then you always start with like a cardboard or something. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and I think after 5 weeks we had like a real, we call it photorealistic prototype, so it's something that really looks exactly like the final outcome, like the bulk production. So we had that after 5 weeks. I think it took us like a week of or week or two of videos and photo shootings. Then we went on Kickstarter. Another 4 weeks down the road, we had 20 grand from Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So we already had, I think, 600 buyers for that product, and with the money we were able to buy 2,000 units. Mm-hmm. So we had 1,400 units left in the warehouse, and then it kind of got more and more and more people ordered. From that money we made more. Yeah, that's kind of. Then we did a Kickstarter for 4 months later in the US, like a real US campaign, which is very untypical. Mm-hmm. We did one in German, only for the German market, already with the plan in our minds to do one just for the US market. Mm-hmm. And then we got, I think, another 40K for, and it was like 98% US, but we only were running Facebook ads in the US. We were, you know, like all the video, the music, it was all like really heavy US style. And that's kind of how it all kicked off.
Did you also do a Indiegogo campaign after the Kickstarter?
Didn't do Indiegogo. I don't even know why we didn't really think of Indiegogo. I don't remember Indiegogo being big 5 years ago. Maybe it was that we just didn't think. It was not that typical, I'm doing a Kickstarter campaign and if it really kicks off, I will for sure do an Indiegogo. Yeah. I think at that time it was more like, do you do Indiegogo or Kickstarter?
Yeah.
But not that really, when a product is running well on one platform, just do the other.
Yeah. Nowadays it's totally usual.
It's like, it's what you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if I rephrase it differently, you had your product, you had maybe your first customers, and then you decided to go to Kickstarter to just have already orders, customers who pay you, and use the money you got to just already do a big order to ship it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We needed money. We were just out of college for four or five weeks when we started our design agency, and so we didn't really have any financial background. We paid patents. Mm-hmm. Like the first money we have ever received went straight into patents. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course I had all that kind of stuff. You know, our first office. We bought like two big fat boys for chilling out, and we still have them. It's like, we look at those and we think like, this is the best money we've ever spent. It's actually before we paid for the patents, this is what we bought. So,
the patents that you mentioned, which patents are that? Is that for design or is that for the way it's produced?
Yeah, design patents and utility patents. Mm-hmm. And we really use them. Yeah. We just had a competitor from a different continent even, who was starting to sell in Europe, and we successfully got him off the market, got a big fat check for, you know, the expenses that we had, and the patents have become very handy.
Awesome. Just for someone who also thinks about developing a product, how much money do you need for a patent?
Very, very interesting questions, because if I understand, there are three different categories of patents. Design patent is the one which is really easy to get, as long as you don't copycat another product, you know. It's also the cheapest one. I will explain how much that costs. There's a utility patent, and I would call it, which is a technical patent. And then there's like the most well-known patent. It's also a utility patent, but it's also proved. So the utility patent is you file it for the registrar, but you do not pay for having your patent proved. So you have it registered, but when you want it, when you want to pull it out and you want to sue somebody else, it has then to get proved to actually come in play.
Okay.
So if you do it without a lawyer, which I would never ever advise anybody to do, then the design patent is like, I think like $80.
What?
It's really cheap, but also the text that you write, because you have to describe it, there's a few, a couple of pictures, and then you have to describe it. And the text, if you do it by yourself without a lawyer, every other lawyer will rip your text apart and be like, no, this is all rubbish, this is not going to work, this is very weak. So it's, I think about $80 without a lawyer, it's like $500 with the lawyer, design patent. It also lasts 70 years, 70. So like the Chuck Taylors, the Converse shoes, they have had like the... they were free on the market for 70 years. And now that the design patent is gone, everybody can do it. Or like the Eames chair, some chairs, they were really strong patent, because the utility patent is only available, only lasts for 10 years. It's a very strong patent, and you can file for both. So it's really, really nice. And utility patent is technical solutions. So if you do like a new machine and you don't care how it looks like, but you want to, you know, want to have call dips on the functions, then the utility patent is what you're going for, and you pay about $5,000 for the unproved version. It's good because you have it, but you have to pay the other five grand for when you really want to pull it out and sue somebody else. So it's 10,000 euros for a few markets. Like if you do Germany, Austria, Switzerland, you pay 10,000. If you want it, people always call us up and be like, you should do like a worldwide patent on this. And that would be like 150,000 euros. It's not everybody does it.
It's also hard to do. I mean, you need a lot of cash flow. And even if you have that money to do that, you still have to have war money, I would say, to just go into war with a company who decides to just copy your product.
People will still challenge you. It doesn't matter if you have a patent.
Exactly.
They will challenge your patent. It's a long war.
But you can still extend the patent after the 10 years, right?
I think there are some ways to extend it. I think the maximum you can do is like 20 years for utility patents, because I think how the world works. People want innovation. They want people, you know, want us to move forward.
And
if somebody has 70 years on a technical solution, they want everybody to, you know, keep improving themselves.
Yeah. What are the things that didn't go well, especially in the beginning? I mean, I assume you had to develop quite a few prototypes. What did you change for the better in the process when you saw, well, this or that didn't go well?
So what didn't go well? I mean, there's just so many things that didn't go well. Just lack of knowledge. I think that's a big, big thing. And there's pretty much nothing you can do about besides just growing and learning. Because if you start at a young age, if you're an entrepreneur at a young age, and you just don't have the knowledge that the other people have, you do not know how long different tasks take. You think, I'm going to do this and it's going to take me 1 month, but it's going to take you a year. You don't know so much stuff. You don't know how to really prove the quality. You don't know the laws. You don't know that if you bet bad quality of a product, you have to really tell about which specific problems the products have within like 14 days, and if you don't do it, you're screwed. Like all this kind of stuff that we didn't know, we burned money and over and over again, just because we did not know how to choose the right partners. We did not know when we, now that we look at business partners, we pretty much, or we have a better understanding of will they do us good or will they just take our money? Mm-hmm. And back at then, you know, you just looked at somebody in a nice suit and it was like, this is proof. This suit is proof that he is successful and he together we will make more out of our both businesses. Like, it was just always doing stuff for the first time. I think for the first 2 years, it was like every day I would learn something new. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome, but it was also, things took forever. It was really nice, like having after 1 year, or I felt like I have done this. Mm-hmm. I have once done this last year. I already know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And that was really nice.
But if you look back, what was your biggest challenge and your biggest learning?
Biggest challenge was quality. It was always, we talked lots about quality of our products. Mm-hmm. We always wanted the best quality and we always thought we would have the best one. We were thinking we would do everything to get our best quality, mm-hmm. but we ended up having like our first batch within the first year. It was just not the best quality. Mm-hmm. And we've never told anybody, we've just told people we need premium quality. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. But we didn't do enough. Now we know, back then we thought we have done everything. Now we know we should have done things differently. So we had really big problems with that in the past, with our very first product. So that was good. Yeah. It's almost good it happened. It still haunts us because we still have a few bad reviews online. Of course, people word of mouth. We still, you know, people from back then know us as having bad quality. That really sucked. Yeah, and choosing business partners. That was a big thing. Some people, when they choose a bad business partner, they go bankrupt.
Yep.
Just because of that one bad business partner, you know? And we have done poor choices in the past. And now I think we know a lot better how to choose business partners, you know? Mm-hmm. Get to know them better and not just jump on the first occasion.
Yeah, touching on that point where you say it still haunts you to this day that you have bad reviews. How important are these reviews for you in terms of sales? Amazon, Google, you name it.
They're super important. It's crazy. And you know, you just can't erase them. So it's you know, you wish that 4 years later they would be like this review. I mean, it says this review is from this year, you know, like, but there are bad reviews, of course, on Amazon, and there is, it says, you know, this review is from November 2016, like 3-4 years ago, but people don't read the timestamp, you know, they just read, and yeah, so of course it's annoying, which never happened. Now we just have to work twice as hard to get even more better reviews. Of course, it's still word to mouth. We get lots of deals in our design agency just because, you know, other clients have said, hey, this is also kind of a review, right? When somebody at a restaurant says, hey, I've been working with things and they've done a really good job.
Yeah.
But yeah, online, Amazon, of course, whatever marketplace, auto, whatever, people look at the reviews and be like, somebody else has given an opinion on this, an anonymous buyer. Mm-hmm. Which I trust more than this, you know, sleek marketing text right here.
Yeah. Well, if you look into Strive especially, how do you market the product? What are your biggest channels in terms of marketing?
So, I must say, marketing is not our expertise. Mm-hmm. It's just something that we have, I think, most improvement to do. What we do a great job with is having unique selling points. Mm-hmm. So our products are very, very different. Mm-hmm. So it's super easy to not compete with too many other products because we are just so different. So that's very easy to market those products, mm-hmm. because you just tell what they can. You don't even have to tell, like we never wanted, or what we don't do is we don't make other products bad. Mm-hmm. We don't say, hey, look at this product, this is so bad and ours is so much better. We just tell what our products can do or which problems they solve. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to look at somebody and almost see his problem or know that he has this problem. If he's a runner, mm-hmm. we have a product for runners. And it's almost, I would say 98%, if he is regularly running once a week, then he knows this problem, mm-hmm. that we have solved. So we just tell him, we have this solution for your problem, and he buys it. So it's very easy to market it. But within marketing, you can burn money very easily.
Yeah.
The big Facebook, Instagram, Google, whoever, they make it so easy to run ads that it's just so easy to burn money on there. Yeah. So you think you're doing a good job, you know, you think you're like, I'm running this right here, and but you really are not doing a good job.
Yeah.
So we need to do more videos of our products.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do a lot more explaining our products.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should step into the camera ourselves a lot more. We should have our designers talk more about the product.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we need to do a lot more.
Yeah.
And that's what we're working on right now.
Yeah. So if I look to your website, to your online shop, and see your product with towel, I see gifts which are sort of trying to explain, of course, your product, but I think you're totally right. Explaining it, seeing a human being using the product,
yeah,
is totally different than just having cool gifts which show how the product could work.
Yeah.
But if you see it in action, it's a total different story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned right now twice that your aim was always to have big problems to solve them, really pain in the asses to solve. How did you figure out that, I mean, with towel, that this was an actual issue? Did you go out and talk with people, or was it just an assumption because you had the issue, or what was it in the beginning with?
Yeah, it was. I go to the gym.
Yeah.
My co-founder, he regularly goes to the gym. So it was something that we have experienced as a problem that we were annoyed by. And maybe people, you know, who listen right now have had something like this, where they had a problem with something, and then they wanted this problem solved, and they went online, mm-hmm, and they were Googling for it, and they're like, I'm ready to buy your product.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have, you know, a price in their mind. Maybe they're like, I don't care how much it costs, I'm going to spend like $50 or $100 right now, I just want to have it solved. And then they found themselves left surprised by that they didn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so the regular online buyer, I would say, he looks around for like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And if he doesn't find anything by then, he's like, it doesn't exist,
mm-hmm,
you know. So, or if people do workarounds, which is having somebody do a workaround is a huge indicator that there is a product missing.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody uses a product A to solve a totally different task, which the product is not made for, then it's an indicator that, you know, somebody's always solving the problem, but with the product that is maybe not 100% solving the problem. So,
mm-hmm,
you know, so that's the example of having the last piece of a toilet paper, and you cut a slice in it, and then you put your phone in it, and it makes music. Like, that's kind of a workaround that, like, somebody should not do speakers. Like, it's not our business, so we're not doing it. But somebody should maybe sell something for very cheap, which is not a paper roll, you know, but maybe just something where, hey, I want to have a little bit of music with me, but I don't want to spend too much money, I don't want to have any electronics,
mm-hmm,
I don't want to charge mine, I don't want to have any electricity. Like, that is something, if you see that, if you'd be like, maybe if I do some prototypes,
mm-hmm,
and if I choose the right materials,
mm-hmm,
then, you know, where the audio is really going through, this could be like a really nice product.
Mm-hmm. Let me write that down real quick. Yeah, I mean, you solved the problem. The success has proven you right, and not only that you're selling your product and that people love the product, but also that you've been on television with this product.
Yeah.
So here in Germany, we have a German version of the American's Shark Tank. I don't want to talk too much about this. Can you maybe give us some insights about the show, how that went? Because we see this on TV. Everyone,
yeah,
loves the show,
yeah,
and now we finally meet someone who was in the show. So
yeah,
tell us about it, please.
So I don't watch TV. I don't have a TV. I think when I was 18 years old, I felt like I've watched enough TV in my life. I was like, this has to go. So I've stopped watching TV. I once, you know, I've been to the States many times in my life. I've lived there for a couple of years, and I once had a glimpse of Shark Tank, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this guy, he was kind of dorky. He was kind of making a funny pitch. And he got just ripped apart. So, like, I watched this show, this guy was on television, he pitched his idea, of course it was funny, you know, but it just didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it, I was like, man, I feel so sorry for this guy. I mean, he was trying, you know, like, now he gets ripped apart, that really sucks. And that was the only thing I've known about Shark Tank. I've known about the German version of Shark Tank. And I think there was one episode, so we were like, we were in the second episode, and they called us. They actually called us and asked us if we wanted to be on the Shark Tank, on the German version. And I remember to this day, I was like, me and Florian, we were working at my living room at that time, like we didn't have our own office yet. And I picked up the phone, and there are calls, I talked to them, and I hang up the phone, I looked at my Florian, and I was like, it was Shark Tank. They want us to go on the show. Yeah, right. And I'm making a clown of myself in the television. Never. That's what I said. It was like, Florian looked at me, was like, I'm not getting ripped apart in television. I don't have anybody make fun of me.
Yeah.
In live TV, or it's not live, in TV. And so that was it. Like, we were like, we're not doing this. Forget it. And I think 3 or 4 months later, so we told him we're not going to do it, and we're not interested. 4 months later, they called again, and I was like, oh, it's Shark Tank again, and they really want us to go on the show. And I was like, you know what, we're not really interested, we don't, we really don't want to do it, but you know what, just send over the contract, just send over all the stuff that you want us to, fill out, and whatever, I might have a little bit. It was not quirky, it was not, it was just like, I just had this one idea, and also Florian, who doesn't watch TV, like, we should have known the power of television. Yeah. But it was, for us, it was like not high quality. It was not a high quality show, which is totally wrong. It's just one of the highest quality television shows in German television. We just did not know, like, because we weren't watching TV back then. And then I had a friend who had a friend. Kuawach is what they call. They have like a chocolate drink with coffee in it. And they have been in the first episode. And I was like, hey man, can I talk to your friend for like 10 minutes? He's been on the show. We've been asked twice to be on the show. Can I talk to them? And he was really busy. We had a phone conversation. I didn't know this guy, Heiko. We had a phone conversation, truly entrepreneurial, at midnight on a weekday. He was riding his bike home from the office. I was just awake in the office or whatever, and it was like, this is awesome, we're talking, he's on his bike, it's midnight, we don't know each other, let's talk. And he was like talking me through all the numbers. He told me, like, hey, we had 30,000 sales in the one night. 30,000, and then our servers broke down, we could have had 70,000. We broke the 1 million euro revenue just because of the show. And it was like, it was like 1 a.m. when I hung up the phone, or 12:30. Florian was still with me. I looked at him and I was like, dude, we gotta go on the show. We have to be on the show. So what we did, Florian went to bed, to sleep. I googled all the sharks, like I googled all of their bios, all 4 or 5 of them. I did that until like 5 a.m. I think, or 6, whatever. I slept for like an hour or two. Then Florian woke up. We had a rental car reserved that night. At 7 a.m. we were in the car. At 8 a.m. we were at a gym from a friend. At 9 a.m. we had our videotape. At noon we had it sent to a Shark Tank. So it was like from prior Z, from like not interesting at all. It was like with that night, with that phone call, it was like, it's 1 a.m. in the morning, we have to set up that videotape before noon. Like, we have waited for 8 weeks, they sold 30,000 units. This is crazy. It was so funny because I googled all the four or five sharks that night, because when we did the videotape of the product, like, we were supposed to do like a videotape to, that they can see, it's a good idea, but are they really going to go on the show? And then we also thought about mentioning interesting facts about our product that could be, that could fit to one of the sharks companies.
Yeah.
So like, we always, like, we didn't say, hey, this is for shark number A, interesting fact. It was like, we said something in the video that where the Sony Pictures team would be like, oh, that product's going to be all interesting for this, for shark A, and this is going to be interesting for shark B. So
yeah,
I was super tired. I slept in the car, but Florian was, he slept a couple of hours, so we were able to drive.
You, in the show, you convinced, I think, 2 of the sharks, if I'm not right.
Yeah, 3.
All right. So in the show, you convinced 3 of the sharks, and what happened then? I mean, did your like revenues skyrocketed during the day release of the show itself? I mean, it will be recorded beforehand, so. And how did your service well? Did they do well? And of course, what happened then?
So we then took it from that night on. We took it like super seriously. Like it was actually the totally other way around, but we didn't do anything else besides Shark Tank. We told our clients and the agency like, hey, we're gonna finish your product. You know, we're gonna finish your project, but there won't be any follow-up projects until whatever in 8 months. You know, I think we had 4 months of writing the pitch, choosing our own stage and all that kind of stuff. Like 4 months of, I was in charge of writing the pitch, and the pitch is only 3 minutes, and then, like, literally it took me 4 months. I always change only small words within the 3 minute pitch, because I, you know, it was just so important that I kept changing stuff. Like I remember one very, very important word was favorite, my favorite feature, because we have so many features that we were thinking people might be like, I don't need the pocket. The product is stupid because there's a pocket, but I don't have anything with me, so I don't need the pocket, so I don't need the product. So we were, you know, that's it. That's one word I changed at the very, very late, like right in front of the show. And I remember, and it went really well because we were three people pitching the product, and everybody had his own favorite feature, so that we kind of, you know, convince people, even if you don't like this feature, you might like the magnetic clip or whatever, and it's still a product that is useful for you, even though you don't have a cell phone with you on, you know, when you work out, whatever. So yeah, we took it very seriously. We even did our own stage. Nobody else did it. Like, we went to the Shark Tank studios a couple days earlier. We built up our own stage because we didn't want, and you know, like we weren't that. It was so important that we didn't want anybody else to, you're going to build this and then it's going to be on, 4 million people will see it and we don't care how it looks like, you know. We wanted to be it just like we wanted it to be. Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Then we pitched. The whole pitch was like an hour and a half. They aired, I think, about 23 minutes, which is crazy because every minute, of course, counts. Every minute of television counted. Usually it's like 10, 12, 13 minutes, so we got like twice as much television time with our product. We're always thinking about, hey, we need to make this look really nice for the investors, but also, of course, through the cameras, we are selling this product live. It's not live, but we are selling this product on TV. Yeah, we convinced 3 out of the 5 sharks. We had like a deal with 2 out of the 5, because of course, one, we had to decide within the show. We chose 2 sharks, and one was very strong in production and in sales. The other one was more like, he was selling experiences, he was selling vouchers for like rock climbing and that kind of stuff. So it didn't really, like, we decided to go with the guy with the experiences who was selling like rock climbing and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, like right after the show, we noticed it's not going to be the perfect fit. Like, we have a physical product, he has more like travels and all that kind of stuff. So we didn't really continue working together that closely, which was okay for both sides. The other shark is very, very strong in production wherever in the world. And he's also strong in selling. He has like many, many customers here in the Austrian, Switzerland, German area. So yeah, he was a strong partner in bringing us into the supermarkets, into the retailers. Yeah, and about the day when the show got aired, it was more than crazy. It was just so much lunatic going on that night. I remember I couldn't use my phone. I was logged into the Instagram account, Facebook account. Of course, I had WhatsApp going. I think I couldn't log in for like 2 hours on my phone because I couldn't push any buttons. Like, I could log and unlock it, but there were just so many messages coming in, so many likes, so many. We had a Kickstarter campaign going on. We were selling a watch on Kickstarter. We had like, the campaign was funded within, I think, an hour. All we had was one Facebook post. Like, we didn't advertise it. We just wanted a Facebook post. I think we sold 130,000 units that night.
Crazy.
260,000 units that week. And I think like 450,000 units within the 2 months coming along. We had the online shop was connected with PayPal. PayPal, of course, sends you emails when you have, you know, when somebody buys in your shop. And we had one laptop in the office while we were watching it on TV, and like the PayPal emails were coming in, and it started like literally we had our like opener, we were running in, and somebody must have snapped like just the name towel, and it was like a ding, you know, like it was like, oh, somebody just got an email, who cares, you know, we're watching this on our own show right now. And then it was like ding. It was like four or five seconds until somebody turned off. It was just like, it was really, really crazy.
That's beautiful. Beautiful to hear.
Yeah, I should have saved it ahead.
Yeah.
My alarm clock or something.
Yeah. So back then you had two products or how many?
We had the towel in like different versions, different colors. That was it. And we were running another Kickstarter, which we of course launched that night. So we were like planning to launch another product on Kickstarter that very night, because we put all efforts into having strong servers, having a good support team, having our own warehouse, like all that kind of stuff. Like we didn't really do anything else besides getting ready for Shark Tank. Yeah.
And today do you have 12 products online?
12 products. We got 48 different variations.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, I think we'll have about 22 products.
Mm-hmm.
We always launch new products for fall season.
Mm-hmm.
So always September, October for the Christmas sales. And we have like 70 variations,
mm-hmm.
70 versions.
So if you had to name your top three products, which one would that be?
So of course it's still the Towel Plus. We have several versions now. We got like a microfiber version, which is called Towel Light, a beach version, which is called the Towel Plus Beach, and we got the Pro version. We're working on a few other versions right now, but the Towel Plus Pro, which is our newest one and it's the best one. Yeah, that's definitely 100% still my favorite. Even after 4 years, I think this product just really kicks ass. Especially starting sales now in Japan was super successful last month. We had one sales manager in our team who just focused on Japan, which was awesome. Hong Kong, the product is a door opener, not only in Germany where we had this big television kickoff, but also in other countries.
Yeah.
Second one is the sitting ball out of leather,
mm-hmm.
which I think we've developed on this product for like 2 years. If you look at it, you'd be like, oh, this must have been taking you guys 2 months. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2 years, it was crazy. And I think it's a world champion, true world champion product. Like the towel is a world champion. I think there is not, and I honestly can say this, I know the market, and our sitting ball is the best sitting ball in its category worldwide. There is nothing better. And we have a keychain for runners. So we're solving the problem for people who go running in the urban areas or in the woods. And they always ask themselves the question, where to put my keys. They either put it on the tire of their car, you know, or usually in the left front tire.
Mm-hmm.
They put it in the flower pot. So like we have a problem, we have solved the problem, and we have a really strong pattern on the keychain for runners. So those are by far my favorite ones.
And it's not only that these are world champion products, it's also that you won awards for this. Is it,
yeah.
Checking your website, you won the design awards for the Towel Plus, for the Strive Ball, for the Strive Watch,
yeah.
which you're wearing right now, in case anybody was noticing. We're sitting actually in the same studio right now. So you won several design awards. Is that, would you say you made that work, or do you have a design team behind you?
We definitely have a design team.
Yeah.
Like, of course we are actively designing with our team, but we have really, really good designers, who win those awards with us. And of course we can't do those products without a whole team in the background, you know.
So we are coming to an end of our 12th episode of The Growth Show. Is there anything else we should have asked you?
I mean, there's so much to tell, right? Sometimes you wonder how much you have grown in the past 4 or 5 years, or like how much you have learned. So if you meet younger entrepreneurs or people that are just whatever age, doesn't matter, if they're just getting started, and like they tell you your ideas, or they tell you your plans, and you could sit down with them for days and like prevent mistakes and be like, I need to tell you this, you know, I mean, you have to try it all yourself, but don't do this better, this is better than this. That's there's so much to tell. It's crazy.
Would you think it makes sense to get this advice from people like yourself that are experienced now? Because making these mistakes in the past helps you to grow and helped you to improve yourself. So I think making these mistakes was quite good for you, wasn't it?
So some mistakes we made, they were so severe, like they could have ended up in a bankruptcy. You know, like this is how severe some of the mistakes were that we did, where we were really looking at our bank accounts and be like, we need to get deals now. And if not, there will be no more sports brand or not under this name. So I, of course, I would like to have other, you know, prevent of this absolute worst final outcome. Whenever I talk to people and they ask me for my advice, I always keep telling them this is only my advice. Mm. I can be wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, you should know that I can be wrong. But sometimes I think some mistakes don't have to be done.
Yeah.
It's like, just don't do it, or don't do it in this big, don't make a big mistake like this, you know, make it really small and then you hopefully have learned it. Yeah, but of course mistakes are a part of the way.
Very cool. Very cool last words, Leonard. Thank you so much. I'd like to sum up a few things you said throughout this conversation. You started with the fact that you always wanted to be the best you could be, which is very easily said and very, very hardly done, I think. And I think many people don't do this if they try to sell on Amazon or they try to sell as much as possible. You try to create a world champion product. So it's not like you create something just to sell it. You create it to solve real problems. And you said, and I really like this as well, if you solve a problem, you don't need to convince people to buy because you have the solution for a problem then, which they face, the runner you mentioned, at least every week. And no matter how successful you are, no matter what happens, people will always challenge you. It doesn't matter if you have patents or not. They will always try and get a piece of the cake. And you just got to hang in there, keep fighting, keep doing your best, keep developing world champion products and go the way that you started. And it was a pleasure having you in the show, Leonard. Thank you so, so much. And we are very excited to see what's coming in the future.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here. Great show. I've listened to all of your 11 other episodes and I really loved them. Thank you so, so much for having me. And till next time.